Charlotte Davis arrives at Creeley Center wrapped in a bloodied sheet, her arms and thighs heavily bandaged to cover self-inflicted wounds made with broken mason jar glass. Unlike other girls in the psychiatric facility who freely share their stories, Charlie has cut all her words out because her heart was too full of them. She remains selectively mute, communicating through notes and drawings. The facility runs on rigid schedules, waking at 6 a.m., structured meals, group therapy, medications, all under constant supervision. Despite being taunted as Silent Sue by another patient, Charlie appreciates having food, warmth, and safety after living on the streets. Her roommate, Louisa, with abundant red and gold hair, becomes a maternal figure who recognizes Charlie as one of her people when she sees her similar scars. As Charlie's bandages come off, revealing red, ropey scars rivering from wrists to elbows, she begins emerging from her silence. After Nurse Vinnie shaves her matted hair, she finally speaks. "It's Charlie, Charlie Davis." This moment marks the beginning of reclaiming her identity and voice. Charlie's past emerges in painful fragments throughout her journey. Her father, cigarettes and red and white beer cans, dirty white t-shirts, committed suicide when she was young. After his death, her mother tucked everything inside and left only her shell, becoming abusive before eventually kicking Charlie out. On the streets, Charlie found a surrogate family. Ellis, a troubled girl who admired Charlie's drawings, Mikey, whom Charlie loved unrequitedly, and Evan and Dump, who once saved her from assault. The most devastating revelation is that Ellis didn't die, but suffered brain damage after a suicide attempt involving cutting, something she learned from Charlie. Now, Ellis exists in a facility, in a state of nothingness. No more hair dye, fishnets, or me. Just Velcroed pants and diapers. This guilt haunts Charlie, who can't make it better or say sorry. Charlie's cutting becomes her method of managing overwhelming emotions, making internal pain external and controllable. When the blood comes, she explains, everything is warmer and calmer. When Charlie's insurance coverage runs out, she avoids returning to her abusive mother by accepting Mikey's offer of his Tucson apartment while he tours. With her ID, birth certificate, and $933 in savings, Charlie journeys across six states to Arizona. Arriving at night to Mikey's purple guest house, she finds a yellow bicycle left by landlady Ariel. Though initially panicked at being alone, Charlie establishes a routine, buying supplies at Circle K, groceries at Food Conspiracy Co-op, and creating a new tender kit of glass shards that provides comfort without cutting. Through Darla at a record store, she secures a dishwashing job at True Grit, a vegetarian cafe owned by Julie. There, she meets Riley, a charismatic but troubled musician who becomes important in her new life. Charlie also rents a small apartment with peeling paint and a clawfoot tub from an elderly landlord named Leonard. The desert represents both opportunity and danger, a place for reinvention that also threatens to swallow her in its vastness. When Mikey returns to Tucson with girlfriend Bunny, Charlie's world tilts. After impulsively kissing him and facing rejection, she becomes vulnerable and finds herself drawn to Riley, a charismatic musician with a dangerous relationship with alcohol. Their relationship evolves mysteriously. Riley calls her his nighttime visitor, sends her on candy-fetching errands, and keeps her separate from his daily life. Charlie falls for his alphabetized record collection, annotated books, and inviting velvet couch. The truth emerges gradually. Riley's errands are drug runs, with Charlie as an unwitting mule. Their codependency deepens like quicksand. Charlie abandons photography and friendships while Riley's addiction consumes him. Everything crashes when Julie discovers them in her office, invoking statutory rape with devastating clarity. Haven't we all been blinded by someone's charisma, missing obvious red flags? The parallel between Charlie's self-harm and Riley's alcoholism becomes painfully clear, both destructive rituals masquerading as relief. Charlie's artistic talent serves as her lifeline throughout her journey. Even during her silent days at Creeley, she communicated through drawing, creating comics about street life, and taking black and white Polaroids with her grandmother's land camera. In Tucson, her portraits of neighbors impress them, and gallery owner Tony Padilla immediately accepts her drawings for exhibition, noting their proficiency and something odd. Her landlady, Ariel, whose walls display dark paintings with tiny strips of light, recognizes Charlie's talent, but suggests she examine herself as a subject. After discovering Riley with his dealer, Wendy, Charlie recovers at Felix Arneson's New Mexico home. Felix tells her that while her drawings show skill, they lack emotion. You need to give your skill an emotion. Following this advice, Charlie creates a comic about a girl with hidden scars, working intensely for days. When finished, she feels transformed, art becoming her path to healing. How often do we discover that expressing our pain through creation somehow makes it more bearable? Throughout her journey, Charlie finds connection through unlikely communities formed around shared trauma. At Creeley, despite diverse backgrounds, the girls forge a profound support system. When Louisa tells Charlie, "Little one, you're with your people," she acknowledges their kinship born from understanding self-harm's deeper drivers. In Tucson, Charlie builds a chosen family: Hector with his quiet wisdom, Manny's protective nature, and Karen's maternal warmth. Her True Grit co-workers show her that work can be a path to belonging. Blue, following Charlie from Creeley, demonstrates how these connections transcend institutional boundaries. When Charlie collapses after a severe cutting episode, her community's strength becomes evident: Hector and Manny stopping the bleeding, Leonard offering medical expertise, while Linus and Tanner drive her to New Mexico for recovery. During her devastating call with Riley, she fights the urge to harm herself by using Linus's advice about surviving difficult moments in incremental time intervals. The novel illustrates that healing isn't a solitary journey, but a collective experience strengthened through relationships with those who understand our deepest wounds. Charlie accepts Felix Arneson's job offer in New Mexico, seeking distance from Riley's memory. Before leaving Tucson, she attends Lewis's benefit concert, where Riley performs a song about their relationship as an apology. He gives Charlie a note: "Charlotte, I do remember, and I did, I do. Take care of yourself. Irwin David Baxter." More importantly, Charlie reconnects with Mikey, who shares that Ellis's face lit up at the mention of Charlie's name during his Idaho visit, news that sparks hope within her. The novel concludes with Charlie on a plane beside Shelley, heading to New York en route to New Mexico. While Shelley shows her viral videos of Riley's performance, Charlie holds both Riley's note and Ellis's address, mentally drafting a letter to Ellis. This ending captures the novel's essence: healing isn't a destination, but a journey, requiring courage to begin again. Charlie's decision to write to Ellis shows her willingness to face her guilt rather than escape it. The story offers not perfect recovery, but something more valuable: hope that each small choice moves us closer to wholeness.